Well, I'll start with a little test for the Aggies in the room by saying howdy. I guess you passed. Well, my name is Stephen Perry, and I am a PhD student at Texas A&M University. And I have a little bit of a disclaimer because we've decided to combine a couple of my projects. So the title is accurate, but there's actually some more information that I'll get into here in a minute. And the source of the resistances that I will discuss are from this Capsicum baccatum accession from the USDA. Nice picture of the yellow corolla spots there. This plant probably would be better as an ornamental plant because the fruit is so small, it doesn't produce a yield that any farmer is really going to work with. So it was a challenge for my professor to get this to cross into a commercially viable cultivar. That was accomplished in crossing it with a Serrano and what we call our hybrid 133, and that's the source of all the resistance for both of the diseases I'll discuss today, plus several other things that we found. And in the beginning, I worked on screening powdery mildew. And we're fortunate in College Station to have powdery mildew blowing in the air. So that was a fairly easy inoculation process. We had about 45 different genotypes, at least 10 plants each. Some we planted 12, but we had some that didn't make it. The screening turned up some interesting results. We were expecting it to be a dominant segregation pattern. And we saw many different categories. Except I grouped them into 5 different categories, and I have a graph in a little while that I'll explain what the categories were. And there's a picture of some of the sporulation, and that picture will become important in a little while because one of my categories, when the sporulation is on the underside of the leaf, I considered that to be a higher level of infection. And then the second disease that this plant has some resistance to is tobacco itch. It's a podivirus, a single filamentous strand. It is a positive sense RNA virus. It is transmitted through insect vectors. This disease initially was screened in a separate sibling population. So I had 2 populations from the same crosses originally, but I was screening one for powdery mildew and one for tobacco itch. And that's where the kind of convergence comes. Now we're trying to find one plant with both tobacco itch and powdery mildew resistance, and since it's from the same source, that is a probable outcome. On the bottom left there is a kind of a grainy picture of some of the inclusions that tobacco itch makes. It makes pinwheel inclusions and other inclusions depending on whether it's in the cytoplasm or in the nucleus. And the preliminary results on the powdery mildew, now this was from the individual population. Currently I have the new population growing where I'm going to do the screening of both diseases. But we had, in phenotype 0, that's no signs of infection. Phenotype 1 is up to 5 leaves with sporulation on the upper surface. Phenotype 2 is between 5 and 10 leaves of sporulation on the upper surface. Phenotype 3 is where it either has more than 10 leaves with sporulation or it has infection on the undersurface of the leaf. And phenotype 4 is either totally dead or totally infected. And we did have some plants that were so infected with powdery mildew that the leaves dropped and there was no real viable plant to move forward with. And the preliminary results for the tobacco itch, and this is one that's pretty interesting, is there hasn't been a dominant tobacco itch resistance gene reported in the literature that I have been able to find. So we did screening. It does segregate in a 3-to-1 in a segregating population. And initially we had some mixed symptomology, so we were wondering, do we have another disease? Do we have multiple diseases? Do we have something else going on? And one of my committee members, Dr. Alave in Weslaco, Texas, did some screening to confirm that it does indeed just have tobacco itch, but tobacco itch can cause all of those morphological symptoms. And the donor parent, which that's a picture here, all but one plant didn't show any disease symptoms. This particular plant showed signs of infection. And some of the potential causes for that, and it reported in the literature, multiple inoculations of the same plant and different leaves, which is what I did the first time. I'll be changing that in the future to just do the same leaf over and over again. But multiple inoculations on multiple leaves have broken down the resistance in the literature. And some examples are the L1 gene for the tobacco mosaic virus and tomato spotted wilt gene for the tomato spotted wilt virus resistance. And then one thing we're also trying to discover is what is the mechanism of the resistance? Is it a hypersensitive response? Is it a limitation of the protein and a movement through the cells? So that'll be something that we hopefully will figure out here soon. And here's an immunostrip screening. This is one of the examples just confirming that there is no other potivirus or no other contamination, at least in those groups there that we have in our population. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about what I'm going to do in the future. I've got one population of plants, about 1,100 individuals, and I'm going to attempt initially to screen it for powdery mildew because that's the easy one. The wind does it for me. And then to satisfy the skeptics for the plants that don't have signs of infection, I'll actually take an infected plant and manually put spores onto the plant. It'll be grown in the greenhouse. There's no use of fungicides or antagonists such as neem oil, and I also found in the literature that liquid phase water can prevent the spores from being able to infect the plant. And then we'll phenotype for a minimum of 4 weeks, beginning at the 6 true leaf stage, and rate them on the same scale from 0 to 4, as was mentioned previously. And then stage 2, the plants that are 0, 1, or 2 in the categorical ranking, will move on to phase 2, where I will inoculate them by macerating infected plants in a pH 7.5 phosphate buffer, rubbing it on the leaf with a paintbrush and carborundum, and this time, now that I've read a little more literature, I think I'll do just a single leaf over and over again instead of multiple leaves, because I think we broke down the resistance in that donor parent. The presence or absence of the system will be recorded for at least 3 weeks, and in the last experiment I did it for, I think it was about 10 weeks. So the goal is to find at least one plant that exhibits resistance to both tobacco etch and powdery mildew. And cross this plant with a known susceptible, likely a banana pepper, create an F1 population, and in that population we want to verify that we do have inherited the resistance genes, and then create a segregating population in the F2 with a minimum of 200 members in the population to both phenotype it and then collect tissue samples and do genotypic analysis through genotype by sequencing to hopefully identify at least 1,000 SNPs so that we can map the resistance as well. And I finished way faster than I expected to. Well, with that, I would like to thank my committee chair, Dr. Kevin Crosby, Dr. Olofemi Alabi in Weslaco, Dr. John Jaffan, also in Weslaco, and Dr. Ron French, who recently moved to the USDA, Dr. Tom Isaacete on the campus in Texas A&M, and then several of the technicians in our lab who have helped me over the years. And with that, I will take any questions.
What happened with your first inoculation method?
Well, I was doing multiple leaves because I didn't want to hurt one leaf too much. And I think through the multiple different inoculation points, it was able to break down that resistance in that one plant. Or it's possible that plant maybe didn't have the gene to begin with for whatever reason. So in some of the literature I've read recently, they'll almost mark it with a Sharpie so they know what leaf they inoculated, and they'll do that same leaf over and over again. And with ours, I see symptoms even after one inoculation, but I usually try to do at least 3. How big is the field? Is that what you said? Most of the research I've done thus far has been in the greenhouse.
Okay.
And the fields, we have research fields in Weslaco and Uvalde. And if we planted 1,200 plants, well, how many row feet do you think that would take for 1,200 plants? 2 plants per foot. So about 600 row feet of planting. We plant 2 side by side there, right? So 6 to 1,200 feet, somewhere around there.
You said the equipment's going to affect inoculation, correct?
Yeah, that's more to do with greenhouse practices and watering the soil versus overhead watering the plant.
Mm-hmm. It seems like relying on wind for disseminating the spores could be a little unreliable.
Yeah, it can be, and that's why the plants that don't show this infection symptoms will actually take leaves with sporulation and put them on those plants. So there's direct contact with the spores.
Right.
Well, in our greenhouse, we don't have a tremendous control over the environment, so that's a challenge probably. Maybe I'll need to look into that because I really don't know how to answer that question right now.